As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. This is John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. If you have not already, please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's just get right into it. Caitlin Clark, the story of sports television. And on Sunday, in her final game as a, or final home game as a member of the Iowa Hawkeyes, she played in front of a crowd of 3.4 million on Fox. That is the largest women's college basketball regular season audience since 1999, UConn against Tennessee. And it was the second largest audience of the entire college basketball season. The only game to do better was a completely anomalous Michigan State-Arizona game on Thanksgiving that had a lead-in from a National Football League game that had 34 million. So really, for all intents and purposes, this is the top college basketball audience of the season. You know, they did not need a 34 million NFL lead-in to get this kind of number. And it's a tremendous number for women's college basketball in the regular season. This is the kind of number women's college basketball was getting for the national championship not that long ago. Just to be clear, like, you can go back to pre-COVID, some of those, I would be surprised if the Arike Ogunbowale game winner against, I don't even remember who she was playing, with Notre Dame, when they won the national title on the three-pointer, that probably had 3.4 million. It was certainly in that range. So the growth that we have seen for the women's college game is unmatched. It's not unprecedented, but what we have seen happen on the women's college basketball level the past few years, it's the kind of thing that you see every now and again. It's like when NASCAR went from just okay to suddenly, whoa, these numbers are out of control when they went to Fox. Or maybe even the NBA when it started to percolate in the 1980s. It's rare. It does not often happen. And I think during the college football season, we were talking about Dion in Colorado, and it's very similar kind of outcome where you're looking at these numbers and going, what is going on here? We said back then, or I did, that Deion Sanders is a Caitlin Clark of college football. Caitlin Clark is the Deion Sanders of college basketball. And frankly, that's underselling it, because this sport, college football, has always been strong. Women's college basketball has never been as strong as it is right now, even back in the 90s when the numbers were technically better. So you can put it, most of it, at the feet of Caitlin Clark, but not all of it. Because as that audience of 3.4 million was watching Caitlin Clark on Fox, there were 600 and something odd, you know, thousand who were watching South Carolina against Tennessee. Remember when Tennessee was the big thing in the SEC? and 680,000 viewers for that game on ESPN, while 3.4 million were watching Ohio State, Iowa. There's real audience for women's college basketball. This is no longer the, you know, with women's sports, I do get the sense that sometimes the desire for popularity outpaces the actual numbers. And we're not there with women's college basketball. The popularity is real. This is real. This is not, oh, wow, viewership is up 50% and it's like 400,000 viewers or something. This is real popularity. And one of the more surprising, not necessarily surprising that the growth happened, but the level of it is really surprising. And I'll bring in Drew on that note.
Yeah, I mean, you did a phenomenal job at, you know, laying all those figures out for us, John. The growth of the sport is undeniable. And I want to get at a few things here. First, is the sustainability here. We obviously know that Caitlin Clark is a one-of-a-kind player and has driven a lot of this viewership growth. You know, you compared it to Deion Sanders earlier this year, or I guess last year with college football. And what we did see with Deion is the numbers went down after Colorado started losing, right? Iowa, obviously a much better team than the Colorado Buffaloes last season. So we don't have to worry about them perhaps falling off a cliff, but I guess I'm more looking long-term. Once Caitlin Clark goes to the NBA, or the WNBA, I should say, what does viewership look like for women's college basketball next season?
That's a very good question. So it's important to know it's not just Caitlin Clark, but it is primarily Caitlin Clark. So the depth of the women's game, and we're still kind of playing out this little mini culture war about UConn, because there's still people going, oh, well, we wouldn't be here if not for UConn. But I look back at the UConn days and I say, thank goodness those are over. And I don't think that the women's game would be where it is now if we were still having to look at Gina Wariema in the final every single year, because every single year UConn was way better. The UConn days, I'm so glad they're over. Everybody should be. Having said that, UConn will probably win the title now just to spite me, but whatever. The point being, the parity in the women's game now is spectacular. It's the ideal parity. So let's be clear about what parity is. Parity is a select number of marquee teams can contend. It's not, hey, all 64 teams have a shot. That is literally parity, but that's not the parity you want. That's what the men have. The men have a circumstance where FAU, San Diego State, Miami, and UConn was the Final Four last year. That's not what you want. The parity you want is like 7 or 8 high-quality marquee teams where you really don't know who's going to win, but you know that you will get out of the Final Four, it'll be out of that 7 or 8 teams. That's what the women have, right? That's the ideal parity. You don't want that ridiculous nonsense that UConn was inflicting upon us for years. And you don't want what the men have right now either. What you want is you have LSU, you have Iowa, you have South Carolina. You do still have UConn. I mean, there's teams I haven't even mentioned yet because I don't follow the season all that closely, but I'm pretty sure what Virginia Tech was good last year in the Final Four. I mean, Ohio State did beat Iowa once this year. I don't know if they're an elite team, but there's a bunch of teams that can win, but not too many. And they're not random teams. And that's the ideal scenario. So Caitlin Clark leaves. Interest in Iowa will plummet, because I could not tell you the name of a single other person on that team, and I don't think a lot of other people could. But you can lose Iowa, because Iowa could get knocked out early in this year's tournament, and you could still have really strong numbers because people care about LSU South Carolina. We saw that matchup in January, and it had 1.6 million viewers on ESPN. That's the most watched weeknight game outside like the Champions Classic and like the Maui Invitational all season in college, including men. So to me, you have enough teams at enough depth to withstand Iowa no longer being a factor.
I tend to agree. And I think one thing that the women's game has going for it, more so than the men at this point, is the continuity, right? You're able to see many of the same players from year to year. So even when Caitlin Clark does leave, you'll still have many household names for women's basketball fans returning next season. On top of that, you have something that is similar to the men's game in that the coaches at some of these top tier programs are true icons, right? You have Don Staley at South Carolina and Mulkey at LSU and, you know, Kenny Brooks at Virginia Tech. And these are coaches that are, you know, creating an environment that is really conducive for growth of the women's game. They champion the game and they promote it in a way that is interesting to people. It makes people want to watch. That being said, I do think it's going to be tough for the women's game to match the numbers that they've put up this year. It is not every season that you're going to have multiple record-breaking games in a row for arguably the best player the sport has ever seen. That is going to drive, you know, monumental numbers that we're not going to see every year. But I do think the trajectory of the women's game is undeniable. And given, like you said, we have this mid-sized cohort of teams that people are able to follow and understand that, you know, year in, year out, four or five of these eight teams are probably going to be contending for a national title. It makes it a little bit more fan-friendly, easier to follow than the men's game, who is really struggling with its identity right now. The transfer portal, fans can't follow. There's no continuity with the teams, with the rosters. Many legendary coaches have recently retired. The men's game is very much in a soul-searching moment in time, and the women's game, I think, has kind of usurped some of that space.
Yeah, I think the men's game is in a transition period, and we don't really know what the other side of that is. Women's college basketball is well positioned to withstand the absence of Caitlin Clark. This is not IndyCar, where, oh wow, Danica Patrick, you nearly won the Indy 500. Look at these ratings. Too bad nobody else in the sport has a national profile, really, right? I mean, I guess Helio was on Dancing with the Stars, but you get the idea. You know, we've seen this time and time again where there's one person who can draw, like Annika Sorenstam on the women's tour, and like there were no other stars. So when she was gone, that was it. You know, or even with the Williams sisters, where Venus and Serena, everyone loved it. Well, that's not true. Venus, especially Serena, took a lot of heat throughout her career. But you know the idea. I mean, people knew who they were. They had strong opinions about them. They didn't have strong feelings about Amelie Mauresmo or, you know, Kim Clijsters or whatever. So this is not that. The sport is stronger. Two things. One, this is a bit of a non sequitur, but I don't want to forget it. If Iowa makes the final and the opponent is not, you know, Dayton or something, I mean, you know, if Iowa makes the final against anyone, but especially if they make the final against another marquee team, and the men's national title game on TBS is some randomly generated nonsense, do not be surprised if the women's national title game outdraws the men's. It's in the realm of possibility. If it's Iowa, LSU in a rematch, then the men's national title game is going to have to be a really good game between marquee teams for me to be confident that it will outdraw that. I think the viewership will be higher this year if it's an LSU-Iowa rematch. If it's Iowa, South Carolina, I think it'll be higher than last year. If it's Iowa against anybody, I think it'll be higher than last year. And so probably 11 to 12 million. I don't think it'll get to like 15 or something. I mean, that's at a level where very few sports get to now. But 11 to 12 million viewers for the women's title game. If the men's title game is akin to UConn San Diego State and it's on TBS, I think it'll be very difficult for it to get to 11 to 12 million. So, you know, be prepared for the possibility that the women's title game will have more viewers than the men's. which just the fact that I could even suggest that's a possibility and not be laughed out of the room is something I would never have thought even a year ago. So that tells you how the dynamics have shifted. The other thing is that the women's college game without Caitlin Clark will fare better than the WNBA with Caitlin Clark. And I think that Caitlin Clark is going to elevate the WNBA and take it to places that it's not been before. But Caitlin Clark will not be as big of a draw in the WNBA as she is now. Caitlin Clark right now also has behind her the brand of the Big Ten, the brand of all of those opponents, a better television deal. She's on in a better time of year with better time slots. The Indiana Fever. First of all, it's the Indiana Fever. It's not the New York Liberty. What a shame the New York Liberty are good now and not in the lottery anymore, right? The Indiana Fever don't carry that cachet.
Yeah, that is a great point. And I think I even saw reports or rumors today that Fox even offered Caitlin Clark an NIL deal to stay at Iowa for an extra year. I mean, if that doesn't show you how much value she adds to the women's college game, I don't know what will. I somewhat jokingly said on social media today, you know, if you're a Caitlin Clark fan, you better figure out where Ion is on your television dial, because you know, the WNBA doesn't have these premier time slots like you said the women's college basketball game does. You know, the WNBA is at a time of year where sports is really in a low period. You know, there's not much going on, and there's really not much momentum to draft off of when people aren't paying attention to sports. I mean, the WNBA did what it had to do with its rights deals, but it is very fragmented. Yeah, you know, it's hard to follow where to find those games on any given night. I do want to get at your point about the possibility that the women's title game, if all the chips fall in the correct place, could outrate the men's game. It was obviously talked about a lot when the NCAA went to market with its championship rights that they would spin off the women's basketball tournament. Given the possibility that this could be an equal or better draw than the men's, at least in a title game scenario where Caitlin Clark is playing a marquee team, does it seem even worse that the NCAA decided not to spin that off into its own separate property?
Yes and no. No, because we know where the market is. You know, I'm not going to pretend that we're not in a circumstance in this industry where things are difficult. I don't think that deal had anything to do with anything other than the market wasn't there.
It's not even that, John. I mean, we just spent 20 minutes talking about how the women's game is probably one of very few growth properties in sports right now, right? This is, you know, a rocket ship currently. And we know a lot of that is Caitlin Clark's doing, but out of everything you could purchase on the open market, I mean, this has got to be one of the more attractive properties you could have purchased, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, I don't know why it was the amount of money that it was, and it was standing pat with ESPN. I don't get it. Because to me, I think everybody should have wanted him. I don't know why NBC wouldn't have wanted him. You know, for Peacock, certainly. I mean, because again, this is the women's college basketball and the College World Series of baseball and softball. That's a tremendous bundle. I don't know why on earth nobody seemingly was all that interested in it. The value of those events, they're short events. Remember, this is just the tournaments, so it's not regular season or anything. The women's tournament is still going to have a whole bunch of games that are getting like negligible numbers on, you know, ESPN News, which isn't even Nielsen rated, but like ESPNU or whatever, right? you know, it's a 68 team tournament. Some of those games are not going to be watched by a lot of people. And it's only 3 weeks, $110 million for ultimately maybe seven-ish, eight-ish really big audiences. So the women's national title game, the women's Final Four, both games. Then you can maybe take a handful of games from the Elite Eight, the Sweet 16, and then maybe a game three of the College World Series, either men or women. It's not that many big, big, big audiences we're talking about. But man, you know, it's a bunch of really strong audiences, really good audiences. It's a lot of value and a lot of subscriptions. I mean, think about all the sports we're talking about here. Think about, I imagine that it includes things like the regionals in college gymnastics and, you know, the regionals, all of those regionals in volleyball and softball. I mean, there's a lot in this deal. But again, we are where we are in the industry right now, and no one deserves anything beyond what they can get. And it's $110 million, apparently.
There's no doubt that, you know, the inventory that ESPN gets from all of those championships is, you know, really valuable for them in particular. But I think the women's tournament would have really had at least two, possibly three bidders. I think it would have really made sense on Fox, given their relationship with the Big Ten and their commitment to the women's game the last couple of years with the amount of games they've put on broadcast. Like you said, I think NBC would also have been a player in this, given how many games they could have put on Peacock and, you know, their commitment to Big Ten women's basketball as well with what they've put together on Peacock. So, I do think there was some value that the NCAA missed out on, but I do also understand that the relationship with ESPN is probably a valuable one for the NCAA. Maybe the trouble of spinning out the women's tournament was not worth it when they consider the rest of their relationship with ESPN.
Yeah, what really amazes me, because I think, yeah, your relationship with ESPN matters, but if somebody else came in and backed up the Brinks truck, that'd make all the difference. This could have revitalized Peacock. You know, we talked before about Peacock spending all that money on one NFL playoff game. They don't even get to air it this year. Same amount of money annually, admittedly, for all of those games, all of that inventory. You're forcing people who love their school and support their school to sign up for Peacock to watch these games. Why on earth weren't they in the negotiating room? I mean, even just like lacrosse would be a value. You don't, you're not paying $110 million for lacrosse, but even just that would drive some subscriptions. I don't know. That one, it is weird. It is weird.
One more thing before we get off the topic of Caitlin Clark. We've gotten Gus Johnson on the call for some of Caitlin Clark's biggest games. Have you tuned in?
I did tune in. I mean, I gotta be honest, I have not watched a lot of this myself. I'm a pro guy. That's really the point. I watch the pros play, and unless the tournament is underway, I'm not watching a lot of college. I will say this, you know, I wonder if it won't work for the WNBA because the WNBA starts during the NBA season, but it means something to put the top tier men's announcer on the women's game. And of course, you know, you don't want to take a job away from a woman, but they really wouldn't be typically anyway. I think mostly it's men who call these games for Fox. For the WNBA, the main announcer is a man, Ryan Rucco. He's a great announcer. They should have Mike Breen call a couple of these games that Caitlin Clark plays in when she's on the Fever. And I mean, just to give it that little extra something, Mike Breen carries a gravitas with him. And of course, he's also called the greatest player in WNBA history, the Teresa Weatherspoon game winner back in 99. I would like to see them see if they can fit Mike Breen on one of these Caitlin Clark games. It probably can't happen because, again, the WNBA season is starting like during the conference finals of the NBA. But I think it would be a good thing. And I know it's kind of a diss a little bit at Rucco, who I like a great deal. It's not meant to be one. I just think that Breen is the voice of basketball, the voice of pro basketball. And I think, you know, as we try to see where the WNBA can go here, it'd be nice to have him call one of those games.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
On that subject, there's a lot of hopes riding on Caitlin Clark. We've seen this story before. I remember when Diana Taurasi came into the WNBA and she was supposed to change everything, and she didn't. Then a few years later, Candace Parker came into the WNBA and she was supposed to change everything, and she didn't. Then a couple years later, Brittany Griner came into the WNBA and she was supposed to change everything even more than the other two, and she didn't. It's a lot to put on somebody. The WNBA doesn't need a savior anymore. The fact of the matter is, the bar for success is not what it was. One, once you last 25 years, you're probably going to keep going. And two, the reality is, in this era of television, the numbers the WNBA gets are fine enough to justify its continued existence on television. But to get to the point where the league wants to go, this is their best chance to get there. Like I said, I think Caitlin Clark will elevate the WNBA to places it's never been, but there are considerations here that go beyond just a superstar. It's a 40-game season in the middle of the summer. A lot of games are airing on non-Nielsen-rated outlets, CBS Sports Network, or streaming outlets, where we won't even be able to gauge the viewership. Already, we've seen that impact the Caitlin Clark numbers. I mean, who knows what other viewership records she would have set if some of her games had not been on Peacock. There's a lot that is against this momentum continuing to the same extent in the WNBA. I do not expect Caitlin Clark to be able to draw 3 million viewers in the WNBA for a while. She's going to have to be going for like her third straight title or something before it gets to that point. And, you know, I could easily be wrong, easily. But the gap between the women's college game and the WNBA, even before this resurgence, was very, very big. Even in the days when we were talking about Ari McDonald in Arizona making it to the final, okay, which was only 3 years ago, but it feels like 30 years ago. Even then, the gap between the women's college game and the WNBA was yawning. And I don't think Caitlin Clark can make up that gap. I think she can finally get the WNBA over the million mark, and maybe even get the WNBA over the million mark a few times. I think we'll see numbers we haven't seen for the WNBA in a very long time, because no game has had a million viewers since 2008. But the kinds of numbers we've been seeing, 3 million, 2 million, and certainly 9.9 million, like for last year's final, these are the last games for a long time, in my view, where Caitlin Clark is going to be playing in front of that kind of audience, except for the Olympics.
Hmm. How much would you attribute to Clark's style of play for kind of sending her over the top versus, you know, the Candace Parkers and the Sabrina Ionescu's and the Maya Moores of the world that you mentioned also were put on this pedestal of being a savior to the WNBA? But when you watch a Caitlin Clark game, it's different. She is pulling up from 35 feet and she looks like the female incarnation of Steph Curry. Like, how much of it is just the way she plays?
Well, I think that's a big factor. One, I would say Sabrina Ionescu and Maya Moore, I wouldn't put them in that category. Ionescu was robbed of her chance at the tournament. Maybe if she had been able to play in the tournament, she would have come in with that kind of hype, but that didn't happen. And Maya Moore was never that kind of draw. She never had that magnetism in college. I mean, she won right away in the pros and it didn't resonate. So, but what you say is very true. Sue Bird made this point, I don't know where, probably on Richard Deitch's podcast. I mean, I don't know. She made it somewhere. That with the WNBA, the style of play is often diminished by people. They rip the players for not being able to dunk and all these things. One of the most awesome plays in basketball in the Steph Curry era is the deep three. And so, Caitlin Clark can do that. Women can do that the same as men. Women cannot dunk like LeBron James. But they can hit the three-point shot like Steph Curry. And in an era that has been, I would still say LeBron is the most popular player. LeBron was voted onto the All-Star team. Steph was not. I mean, that's just one indication. I'd still say LeBron is the most popular player in the NBA, but Steph is the most loved. And Steph is the most influential among kids. And so it's his era in that way. It's his era in a style of play way. I mean, LeBron even plays like Steph now with these, you know, these deep threes. And in this era, a woman who can play like Steph Curry is equivalent to Steph Curry, right? We're not having to watch Lisa Leslie, you know, barely get rim on a dunk and try to pretend that's the same thing as LeBron James dunking. But Caitlin Clark hitting a three from half court, a half court three is a half court three, no matter who takes it. There's no testosterone advantage with that. And that is an enormous reason, because people can't diminish her. They can't diminish her the way that they have been able to successfully diminish all of those who came before her. And now that the NBA is a game where the most awesome shot is the deep three, not a dunk, that makes it so much easier for someone like Caitlin Clark to be accepted.
You mentioned Caitlin Clark's impact on the Olympic team. Obviously, that is coming up this summer. What kind of viewership do you expect for that team to draw? Is this going to be kind of a phenomenon similar to what we've seen with the college game, given just the star power that will be on that team this summer?
Is she on the team?
Clark?
Yeah.
I doubt they've had to release the roster. I'm not sure. Maybe she's been invited. Yeah, maybe I should know that before asking the question.
I mean, obviously you want her on the team. I cannot see a rookie who just played in college, then straight into the WNBA, now onto the Olympic team. They've got more than enough good players on Team USA to not have, you know, the other thing too can be, is, you know, Caitlin Clark's playing against bankers right now. He's playing against people who are going to be bankers in a couple of years. You know, she's not going to be the best player in the league. And that's another really important thing to point out. Dana Taurasi, the greatest player who ever played in the women's game professionally, because obviously Cheryl Miller is the greatest overall. Dana Taurasi came into the WNBA and didn't win jack for 3 years, right? Didn't make the playoffs until she made the finals the first time in, I think, year four. Candace Parker was an MVP, I believe, in her rookie year, but didn't win a championship until 2016. It's a long time before she won a title. Maya Moore won immediately, but like I said, she was not on the same level as they were. And Brittany Griner won immediately, but But that's because Diana Taurasi was on her team. She was not the driver of that. Caitlin Clark's going to go to Indiana with Aaliyah Boston, and they're going to miss the playoffs, right? You know, more than likely. I mean, then again, eight teams in a 12-team league, they might make it. But, you know, it's entirely possible they're going to miss the playoffs. There's going to be an adjustment period. Sabrina Ionescu, in her first year, she had a terrible ankle injury. We have no idea physically what the very quick adjustment from playing a bunch of kids to playing the greatest players in the world is going to be. It's not the same as in the NBA. In the NBA, the draft is closer to the end of the last season. In the WNBA, the draft is right before the start of the season. You're playing in the Final Four in April and the WNBA in May. I'm not expecting her to do, you know, it's the pros. She's going to have to learn how to play in the pros. So all of which is to say, I mean, they've got enough great players that they would not need her to be on the Olympic team. And if she was on the team, she's probably riding the bench.
I strongly disagree with you there, John. I think it would be foolish to keep her off the team. I mean, how does her skill set not translate to the professional game? I understand that it's a jump, and I'm not diminishing that at all. Mm. And I'm also not disputing the fact that she could be riding the pine for the Olympic team, but to keep her off the roster, I think A, would just be a missed opportunity for women's basketball writ large. You want to have her on the roster at the very least to generate some publicity around the team. And I know that's not a great reason to put her on the roster, but her skill is undeniable. And I don't think her shooting ability is something that isn't going to translate to the pro game just as easily as, you know, she's able to do it in college. I mean, if you just watch one of her games, she's getting hounded constantly by the opposing defense, double team, triple team. Her passing ability out of a double or a triple team, her ability to run off screens. I think this is all stuff that will translate well to the WNBA. And I don't know. To me, once again, it would just be foolish to keep her off the Olympic roster.
Fair enough. But all I can think is Christian Laettner on the Dream Team. You know, she's not one of the 12 best women's players in the world. Not yet. So I think, you know, the 12 best women's players in the world who will all be Americans, I think, you know, that's probably your depth chart. And if you want to put her on there for publicity, that's a smart move. I get it. She does bring in, she's the most popular player in women's basketball and is behind only LeBron and Steph, period, in my opinion, in basketball as far as individual draw. But, I mean, we are talking about basketball, and you got the 12 best players in the world are all wearing the red, white, and blue. So I would go with who are you taking off the Olympic team to put Caitlin Clark on it?
Well, I couldn't tell you whose spot she's taking. You'd be better at that than me. But I don't know. I just can't see. I mean, imagine the storylines to come out of that roster selection if she's not there. I mean, it's not going to be good. I mean, the only thing more intriguing that I could think of is if, you know, we as in the United States of America somehow end up playing Russia or something in the finals and Brittany Griner gets to have her revenge game.
Yeah. Who are the Russians going to play? Becky Hammond? Going to bring Becky Hammond back out? Who are the good Russian players?
I have no idea. I have no idea. All right. I think we've gone long enough on this topic. John, let's get to one more serious topic today, and that is the death of Chris Mortensen. Of course, I'm sure most people listening to this podcast are well aware of the news by now. There's an outpouring of, you know, love and support for Mort over the weekend as news of his passing was publicized. John, there's definitely a conversation to be had here about how Mortensen kind of developed the role of the insider. It's probably something that you could speak to at more length than I can as someone who probably got to witness more of the development of that role than myself, at least in your formative years. So how did you kind of see Mort in the pantheon of NFL reporters and analysts?
Well, I'll put my cards on the table and be completely honest here. I did not follow the NFL very closely until about 2003-ish. So obviously by that point, Mort was very well established. So I didn't really see his development in that role. I didn't see it from the beginning. But watching Sunday NFL Countdown, was like a marquee event in and of itself. Every Sunday morning, it was a must-see, not unlike SportsCenter. And Chris Mortensen was integral in that. And, you know, that was a time when the ESPN studio meant something more than it means today. And even though Adam Schefter has a higher profile today, I don't think anybody really ever had a higher profile in this role than Mortensen, not even a Jay Glazer, who I guess has more viewers on him each week on Fox. I think when all is said and done, you're talking about somebody who, along with Don Clayton, was part of a golden age of ESPN reporting that will never be replicated because reporting simply is not done that way anymore. A time when ESPN was, it was like water. You just didn't even think about it. It was the voice of sports. It was the worldwide leader. It is certainly not that anymore. I mean, I guess technically it is, but, and, you know, to be an insider for the worldwide leader meant that you were the dean of what you were doing. And Mortensen was certainly that. Don Clayton, Peter Gammons, who's, you know, left a long time ago, you know, David Aldridge, the DA of the NBA. You know, whoever ESPN had on the beat was someone who you associated intrinsically with that beat. And Mortensen certainly was intrinsically associated with the NFL.
I do want to get at one aspect of Mortensen that, you know, just based on my reading and seeing what other people have written about him in the last few days, seems to be one of his lasting impacts on NFL reporting. And that is kind of the nugget genre, if you will, of reporting. You mentioned Jay Glazer as like an example of this on your Sunday NFL pregame shows, where the anchor will toss to the insider and they'll give their scoop about what's happening inside the locker room or inside the front office for a certain team. How integral was Mortensen in developing that kind of style of reporting?
I'm not the expert on this in terms of evaluating that particular aspect of Mortensen's legacy. I've always associated the nugget style reporting with Adam Schefter. Part of that is from the book by what's-his-face, some guy at the New York Times. Big Game by Mark Leibovich. He really goes deep on the idea that Schefter is the inaugurator of the nugget style of reporting. And so I kind of associate it with Schefter for that reason. And realistically, nuggets to me are commodified information. I don't really think that Mortensen was doing that kind of stuff.
That's a good point. I guess more of what I was trying to get at was the more insidery approach to reporting the NFL, you know, kind of analysis that wasn't necessarily about the X's and O's. It was more so a meta analysis of what's going on either, you know, in the front office or in the locker room.
Well, that was inevitably going to happen. I mean, CBS was doing it with Will McDonough, who ended up going to NBC. So that, you know, I if Mortensen had never gone to TV, I think that would still have happened. You know, maybe it would have been somebody different.
All right, John, I think that's a good place to put a bow on this episode. Why don't you close us out?
All right. Another interesting week. I will say, you know, anytime there's a big rating story, just obnoxious Clay Travis nonsense comes through. I do want to say this. You know, Clay is more obsessed with the NBA than Skip Bayless is with LeBron James. And anytime your level of hateration exceeds that of Skip Bayless, you have reached a very, very low place. I will simply say, if you saw the Clay Travis viral tweet, First of all, if you read my work, you're probably not listening to what Clay Travis has to say anyway, because you found a more reliable source. But I will say that if you did see the viral tweet about how women's college basketball is now regularly beating the NBA, of course, that's not true. Duh. I mean, it goes without saying, we know women's college basketball is having a tremendous season. And no, it's not regularly beating the NBA. This was Sunday, the second time this season. That's two. That a women's game has beaten an NBA game on ABC, ESPN, or TNT in the same day. I will simply say that if you come across something that Clay Travis says about the ratings, he's lying to you. Let's wrap up. More sports talk next week. I assume there'll be a reason to have a show. If there isn't one, we won't have one. If there is, we will. See you then.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.